Public Radio KMXT is supported by a grant from North Pacific Fuel, serving and continuing the tradition of excellent service to the community at three locations: Marine Dock at 715 Shelikoff Street, Gas & Go at the Y, and Gas & Go at Mill Bay.
It's nearly 12 o'clock and time for the KMXT Midday Report. Thanks for listening to KMXT. On 100.1 FM, it's your public radio station. Broadcasting from damp Kodiak, Alaska, where it's 41 degrees and we're looking for more rain today. High near 45, east wind to 15. For tonight, rain before 10, then showers. Low around 38 tonight. East wind to 5. Should become completely calm this evening sometime. And for tomorrow, showers likely, mainly before 7. Cloudy skies tomorrow with a high near 46. Calm winds. So it doesn't sound too bad tomorrow. Coming up on the KMXT Midday Report, the Kodiak Island Borough School District looks forward to summer school. Also, tiny homes are gaining traction in Alaska, but there are some legal challenges. And with COVID cases down, vaccinations up, Alaskans are hoping to do some more outside this summer. That and more right after NPR News.
Hi from NPR News, I'm Lakshmi Singh. The FBI confirms the hacking group DarkSide was responsible for the breach of a major U.S. fuel pipeline operator. NPR's Ryan Lucas has more on the fallout from the latest high-profile cyber attack.
The FBI says in a statement that the ransomware attack against Colonial Pipeline was conducted by DarkSide, which American officials call a criminal gang. Colonial Pipeline says it learned of the cyber attack on Friday and took certain systems offline as a precautionary measure. That includes main pipelines that carry fuel from Texas up the East Coast. Officials say there has been no disruption in supply at this point. Colonial says it is working to restore service, but that the situation remains in flux and getting everything back online will take time. The FBI, meanwhile, says it is working with its government partners as well as Colonial on the investigation. Ryan Lucas, NPR News, Washington.
The threat of online attacks on children is driving dozens of states to confront Facebook. 44 attorneys general, Democrat and Republican, are urging CEO Mark Zuckerberg to forget about delivering a new version of Instagram that caters to users under 13 years old who are currently too young to have an Instagram account. As NPR Shannon Bond reports, the AGs argue that what Facebook's offering up would be anything but kid-friendly.
The attorneys general say children are not equipped to navigate the challenges of social media, from privacy concerns to cyberbullying. They point to research linking young people's social media use to depression and other mental health issues. They also say Facebook does not have a good track record when it comes to protecting kids, citing a design flaw in its Messenger Kids app that allowed children to join group chats with strangers. Facebook says it's just starting to explore a version of Instagram for preteens and will work with experts, lawmakers, and regulators to prioritize safety and privacy. It says any version of Instagram for children will not contain ads. Facebook is among NPR's financial supporters. Shannon Bond, NPR News.
Hamas militants in Gaza fired a barrage of rocket fire into Israel, seven of them toward Jerusalem. Israel responded with an airstrike. It says it targeted militant targets. Gaza health officials say Palestinian children were among those killed. State Department spokesman Ned Price says the U.S. is fully engaged in promoting calm in Jerusalem.
While we urge de-escalation on all sides, we also recognize Israel's legitimate right to defend itself, to defend its people and its territory.
The fighting intensified tensions that involved weeks of clashes between Israeli police and Palestinian protesters in Jerusalem. President Biden says he's not seeing much evidence of it, but any American who turns down suitable job offers will lose their unemployment benefits. He addressed jobs just days after the Labor Department came out with a disappointing labor report that showed fewer jobs created than expected in April, 260,000 versus roughly a million. You're listening to NPR News.
NPR News es presentada a usted en parte por la Providence Kodiak Island Centro de Asesoramiento. Para una cita o más información, por favor, llama al 907-481-2400.
As the Kodiak Island Borough School District begins to look ahead to its summer class schedule, Superintendent Larry Ledoux spoke to KMXT about the school district's plan for the future.
We see summer school services, our summer enhancement program, as an extension of the current school year in a preparation for the next school year, so a transition. It will be in person. Kids will be wearing masks, and we hope to integrate learning, particularly in ELA or English Language Arts and Math, in an environment where kids can have fun.
The school has largely had success in keeping COVID cases down since they reopened, and many extracurricular activities are appearing again in Kodiak.
We've been working closely to communicate to parents from the very first, and the community has a low rate of transmission right now, and that has allowed us to make activities more available for kids. So currently we have, if you go down to the field on Friday afternoon or Thursday, you may see 200 students participating in soccer and track and softball and baseball. And then if you walked into one of our gyms, you might see wrestling going on. So we're really happy. We've had visiting teams come down here, and they test before they come here. And this week we have 80-some students traveling to the mainland, and we will test them all when they leave. And so far it's been going very, very well. We still wear masks in school. We still maximize social distancing. But last Saturday night we had a prom. Probably one of the few high schools in the state to have a prom.
Summer programming for the school district begins in early June. Tiny homes have gained traction in recent years as an affordable housing alternative, but building them poses legal challenges in many communities. Sitka was one of the first cities in the country to introduce a set of tiny home-friendly code changes last year, but as KCAW's Aaron McKinstry reports, a year after passing the groundbreaking ordinance, no one is building them.
A few years back, Stephanie Cruz and her husband decided they were sick of renting. They moved around a lot for Cruz's job, so buying a house wasn't a great option. Besides, with Southeast Alaska's high rental rates, they weren't saving enough for a down payment. They looked at manufactured homes and RVs, but ultimately settled on a tiny house on wheels.
Tiny house holds its value a lot better than an RV because it's built with more traditional construction materials that are meant to withstand the weather. And then also, you know, they're whimsical and fun.
With beige siding and a blue metal roof, the roughly 170-square-foot house looks like a mini single-family home. Cruz and her husband took out an RV loan and paid a company in British Columbia $40,000 to build it. They moved it to Juneau on the ferry. When Cruz's job brought her to Sitka, the tiny house came with them. Even with their loan payment and the cost to rent a spot at a local RV park, Cruz says they were paying a couple hundred dollars less a month than if they were renting.
I think the kind of ruling concept for people who do small homes or tiny homes is a small house for a big life. If you can reduce your housing expenses and, you know, kind of minimize that in your life but still make it a pleasant place to be, then that gives you the ability to kind of put your funding towards the things that you are really passionate about in your life.
For Cruz and her husband, that meant a trip to Japan and saving to buy a regular house. And when they sold the tiny house and left Sitka for the Pacific Northwest, that's exactly what they did.
I think it's a really great stepping stone to homeownership like it was for us.
But even though rent in Sitka is high and homeownership can be cost prohibitive, people in Sitka aren't following in Cruz's footsteps. That's despite changes to the city's building and zoning codes a little over a year ago to make tiny homes easier to build. Pat Swadeen is Sitka's building official.
There's definitely been a few individuals who have been interested in it. We've also had actually a couple of companies think about maybe trying to go that route. Thus far, we haven't had anybody actually begin that process of permitting and constructing a tiny home.
Even before the changes, Sitka didn't have a minimum house size, but meeting building standards for small structures was a challenge. So Sitka adopted a set of international regulations to make it easier to build houses under 400 square feet, allowing for things like ladders and lower ceilings. It also addressed a legal gray area for tiny homes on wheels. Before last March, Sitka considered them RVs, like almost any other place in the country. And legally, you can't live in an RV year-round in Sitka. Now, they have their own designation. They're allowed in trailer courts, and there are some zones where they can be placed on lots by themselves with planning commission approval. But there are still barriers, like the cost of construction, Swadeen says.
Per square foot, a tiny home isn't really super affordable. You know, since it's small, it's not like the cost of building a 2,500 square foot house. But you still need to have cooking appliances, you still need to have heating appliances, you still need to have bathing facilities and a toilet and things like that.
Financing and land availability are also big hurdles. Jennifer Younger bought Cruz's tiny home as an affordable option for her son. Much like Cruz, it allowed him to save money to buy his own house. Now they're looking to sell. But Younger says land availability has stopped a lot of potential buyers.
We've had several people very interested and check it out, and it's a beautifully built, you know, little home, but people just don't have property to put it on.
Even though tiny homes haven't taken off, Sitka Conservation Society's Chandler O'Connell isn't discouraged. SCS partnered with a Sitka High School construction class to build their own tiny house a few years ago. Their efforts to sell it sparked a community conversation, which contributed to the eventual code changes.
And I think our learning from past code changes is it takes a while for that information to get out there. It takes a while for people to understand the implications and think about how they want to implement that in their own building decisions. But I'm excited to see how it can shape Sitka's housing market over the next few years.
She says she sees tiny homes as one affordable housing option of many. They won't work for everyone, but it's about getting more tools in Sitka's housing tool belt. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Erin McKinstry.
With COVID case numbers down and vaccinations up, Alaskans are looking ahead to a much more normal summer. Outdoor events like concerts and fairs are often a big part of that fun, but it's not clear how many events will be back this year. Max Young Rice spoke with organizers from two popular events who are carefully weighing their options and making tough decisions.
Every June, the Alaskan Scottish Highland Games celebrate Scottish culture at the State Fairgrounds in Palmer. There's bagpipes, food, and Scottish athletic competitions like racing in kilts and tossing poles the size of trees. In 2020, they took a break because of the pandemic. This summer, they're back.
We've come to the conclusion that we think we can pull it off. We are at the State Fairgrounds, and we have a lot of room to grow out there. So that works towards our advantage of being able to mitigate things by spreading things out.
Jenny McDaniel is the executive director of the Alaskan Scottish Club, which puts on the Highland Games. She says that having space to socially distance makes it possible to keep the games largely as they were. On the other hand, summer mainstays like the Moose's Tooth concerts, Anchorage's Pride Parade, and 4th of July celebrations have been taken off the books. Brad Cook is a superintendent with the Anchorage Parks and Recreation Department who handles permitting for local outdoor events. He says most of the canceled events could have met safety requirements, but organizers decided it just wasn't worth it.
There's nothing that's truly safe in anything we do, but we try and get the risk mitigated enough so that it's comfortable enough that it's not an increased risk for folks. Most events have canceled themselves.
The key ingredient here is space. The Highland Games have made some compromises. Vendors are being asked to put on masks, and it'll be held over 2 days instead of one, among other things. But otherwise, the massive state fairgrounds will allow the games to be pretty much the same, kilts and all. By contrast, the Three Barons Renaissance Fair Board made the tough decision to cancel the regular fair in favor of a smaller event later this summer. The fair has been held every June in an 8-acre lot in East Anchorage. Over 2 weekends, 400 volunteer actors put on period costumes and form the medieval village of Hillshire. They organize activities like axe throwing. Site manager Kevin McClear says CDC guidelines are just incompatible with the event.
For this village, we have 12,000 people over 4 weekends come visit with a cast of 400. And our patrons will be walking down the main street of Hillshire with vendors on both sides, in close proximity. And there'll be actors who will be right there interacting with them on a very, very close level and a very intimate level.
McClear says the fair is designed to be a densely populated village that fairgoers can walk around, running into actors in corsets and armor. The safe plan would have called for one-way traffic through the whole fair, with actors stuck in place.
There wouldn't be any spontaneous interaction with cast. The audience and cast would all be going in the same direction. You wouldn't, run across anything. You wouldn't look up and see a baron coming at you from the other direction and have that interaction.
The three barons organizers aren't upset with the guidelines. They recognize that the fair as normal wouldn't be safe, and they didn't want to put their volunteer staff in an uncomfortable position. Meanwhile, in Palmer, Executive Director Jenny McDaniel says the Highland Games will move forward with something that feels very familiar.
Obviously, there's no way to prevent all risks, but we're mitigating the risk. We're doing what we can. We think our community is ready and excited about getting back together, and we really want to help move that forward.
The challenge that organizers are dealing with is not just about whether the event is safe. It's about whether the events can be what they were before. They're chasing something that's in short supply. Normality. From Anchorage, I'm Max Youngrice.
Alaska Congressman Don Young has compiled a list of roads and public buildings he'd like to see the U.S. House include in the next round of spending bills. This used to be routine. Lawmakers would request specific amounts for their district for specific projects every year. It was called earmarking. But more than 15 years ago, Young and then-Senator Ted Stevens ignited national outrage and effectively killed the whole practice of earmarking. Now, Democratic leaders in the U.S. House are tiptoeing back to earmarks, but with new rules, and Young says it's a step in the right direction. Alaska Public Media's Liz Ruskin has this report.
Earmarks have been rebranded. Officially, House Democrats call them community project funding requests. Congressman Young has 23 on his list. Cape Blossom Road in Kotzebue, Cowles Street in Fairbanks, an upgrade for Juneau's sewage treatment plant, a new fire station for Kodiak. In Bethel, a renovation on campus to enroll more nursing students. What's not on Young's list? One very large bridge from Ketchikan to Gravina Island, where the city's airport is. Back in 2005, Young and Senator Stevens tried to get $220 million for the bridge. Earmarking foes and fiscal conservatives hit the ceiling. They called it the bridge to nowhere. They emphasized that only 50 people live on Gravina. Here's the late Senator Tom Coburn of Oklahoma.
Think about that for a minute. A bridge longer than the Golden Gate, for 50 people to a small area in Alaska, is enough money to buy every one of the inhabitants their own hundreds of speedboats to cross any time they wanted. They could cross and leave the speedboat for somebody else to pick up and to get it, buy a new one the very next day and still not spend this much money.
Earmarking, critics said, led to terrible waste, and the Ketchikan Bridge was their prime example. Earmarks were derided as pork, as a way for Congress members to curry favor with political supporters. Earmarking fans don't see it that way. The alternative, in practice since an effective ban was imposed in 2011, is for Congress to send money to the agencies and let administration officials decide where to send it. Young calls that an abdication of congressional responsibility. On the plus side, earmarks can grease the gears of Congress. They give members of the minority party a reason to help pass a bill. The new Democratic rules for earmarking say each request will be posted on the web. Lawmakers have to certify that no one in their family has a financial interest, and the beneficiary can't be a private company. Though Young hasn't requested an earmark for the Gravina Island Bridge, he still thinks that aspiration and the oft-proposed Kinnick Arm Bridge for Anchorage will become concrete. Eventually.
As population grows, times change, you'll see those bridges built, even if the state or private money will build it. You know, if I had another 100 years to live, I'd raise the money now and build a bridge. As long as I had the right to take and charge for it, I'd be a billionaire before I was dead. But I'm not that young anymore.
Young was one of only 106 House Republicans to request earmarks of the Appropriations Committee by the April 30 deadline. About half did not, suggesting earmarks still carry political stigma. Reporting from Anchorage, I'm Liz Ruskin.
KMXT Local News is underwritten in part by
GCI. GCI has adjusted store hours across the state to keep our customers and employees as safe as possible during this time. The most up-to-date store hours are available on GCI.com.
This is Alaska Fish Radio. I'm Lainey Welch. Plant-based seafood makers push back against labeling. More after this.
Did you know that eating wild and sustainable Alaska seafood can boost your immune system? Learn more about Alaska seafood's many proven nutritional benefits at wildalaskaseafood.com.
Plant-based seafoods such as vegan shrimp, crab cakes, or tuna are a growing rage, but unclear labeling is confusing customers. A new study done by Food Minds showed that about 40% of consumers believed plant-based imitations contain actual seafood. Up to 60% thought the products had similar nutritional content as real fish. Yet fake seafood producers are pushing back against labels that tell exactly what's in their products.
We have to ensure that the labels themselves are educating people about something as simple as what's in the package. And a lot of these plant-based alternatives have suggested that they have the First Amendment right to call their product whatever they want.
Gavin Gibbons is Vice President for Communications at the National Fisheries Institute, the nation's largest seafood trade group. There is nothing wrong with the vegan seafood products, Gibbons says, but the makers don't even want the term imitation included on their packaging.
A package has something called a statement of identity on it. It is supposed to tell consumers what is in the package. And a lot of these highly processed plant-based alternatives have labels that tell you what is not in the package. For instance, it says vegan shrimp. Well, it's a vegan product that does not contain shrimp.
Gibbons says NFI is working to get a federal labeling fix, and there is support on Capitol Hill. Meanwhile, without any evidence, vegan seafood makers insist customers know what they're getting. Their promotions brutally bash the seafood industry as being unsustainable and cruel, and urges customers to leave fish off their plates for good. Find links at AlaskaFishRadio.com. Fish Radio is also brought to you by Ocean Beauty Seafoods. In Kodiak, I'm Lainey Welch.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements. Arctic Care 2021 is coming to Kodiak May 5th through May 13th. Arctic Care 2021 is a no-cost healthcare services program provided by the U.S. Department of Defense in partnership with Kodiak Area Native Association. Arctic Care offers no-cost dental, medical, and optometry services to anyone in the Kodiak community. To learn more, including how to schedule an appointment, go to kodiakhealthcare.org or call 486-9870.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KM.
Not quite that time yet. Good afternoon and welcome to your Island Messenger for Monday. It is the 10th day of May, the year 2021. Sun rose today at 5:57. It won't set again until 10:18. That will give us 16 hours and 21 minutes of glorious daylight, a gain of 4 minutes and 19 seconds compared to yesterday. Our record low for this date was 27. That was set in 1964. And our record high was 66. That was set in 2014. Currently 41 degrees here in Kodiak. It's been damp lately. We are looking for more rain this afternoon, the high near 45, east wind to 15 miles per hour. For tonight, rain before 11, then turning into showers after 11, a low of about 38 tonight, east wind to 5, should become calm. And for tomorrow, showers mainly before 8, cloudy skies tomorrow, high near 46, and calm winds. So it sounds like a pretty nice day tomorrow. We have an incoming tide. Our next high tide here on the east side will be at 2:33 p.m. and be 7 feet, followed by a low tide at 8:03 p.m. of 1.5 feet. And our high tide for the middle of the night here on the east side will be at 2:12 a.m. and be 8.8 feet. Our low tide for tomorrow morning will be at 8:48 a.m. and be minus 0.65 feet here on the east side. Or on the west side, these are Uganic Pass tides. You have a high tide coming up at 2:52 p.m. of 13.7 feet, followed by a low tide at 8:47 p.m. of 1.6 feet. Your next high tide will be at 2:43 a.m. of 15 feet. And your low tide for tomorrow morning on the west side will occur at 9:15 a.m. and be a minus 1.4 foot tide. Mariners, here's your synopsis for the North Gulf Coast, including Kodiak Island waters and Cook Inlet. A front entering the western Gulf will move across the northern Gulf through Tuesday afternoon. A North Pacific low along the front will move to 35 nautical miles southeast of Middleton Island and go to 1,010 millibars for Tuesday morning. This low will move inland Tuesday afternoon. As a result, Marmon Island is Sitkanat, Kodiak's east side offshore, southeast 15 right now, seas to 7 feet. For tomorrow, variable 10, seas to 6 feet. Over in the Shelikof, Kodiak's west side, east 15 right now, seas to 5 feet with widespread rain showers. For tomorrow, variable 10, seas to 3 feet. Inside waters, Chiniak and Marmot Bays. For Chiniak Bay, southeast 15, becoming east 10 this afternoon, seas to 4 feet. For tomorrow, variable wind less than 10, seas to 3 feet. Up in Marmot Bay, east wind 15 right now and seas to 4 feet. For tomorrow, variable less than 10, seas to 2 feet in Marmot Bay. Well, you may have heard that tsunami siren going off for a little bit on Saturday. That is expected to happen again today. The tsunami sirens are being tested intermittently. That should all be wrapped up by 5 p.m. So if you hear the tsunami sirens go off every once in a while, it's a normal thing, and they're getting all the bugs shaken out. Looking at meetings coming up for the Kodiak Island Borough, we have a local emergency planning committee quarterly meeting. That's happening Wednesday at 1:30 p.m. in the assembly chambers. The Planning and Zoning Commission is having a work session also on Wednesday. That's happening at 6:30 p.m. in the assembly chambers. The Borough Assembly will be having a work session on Thursday. That's occurring at 6:30 p.m. at the Bayside Fire Hall. And the Consolidation Committee meeting will be happening on Monday. That will occur at 6:30 p.m. next Monday in the conference room. Kodiak Island Borough School District Board of Education is seeking citizens interested in serving on the board through October 2021. Letters of interest must be received by 5 p.m. Wednesday, May 19th, so you have 9 days. Interviews for the appointment will take place May 24th, and then at a special work session, the appointment will be official for the 2021 special meeting. Citizens interested in serving on the school board should submit a letter of interest to Bianca Clark. She is the school board secretary, care of the Kodiak Island Borough School District at 722 Mill Bay Road in Kodiak. Her email is bianca.clark@kibsd.org. The Alaska Marine Safety Education Association and Alaska Sea Grant will offer fishing vessel drill instructor classes here in Kodiak. That's happening May 13th from 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. and May 14th, 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. at the UFA Seafood and Marine Science Center over on Near Island. The cost for the class is mere $125 for commercial fishermen and $175 for all others. Interested mariners may register online at www.amsea.org. That's AMSEA.org. Or you can call 907-747-3287. And that class covers a lot of great stuff. Anyone going out on the water should take it. Due to COVID-19, the Alaska Business Development Center is providing free tax preparation to rural communities remotely from Anchorage. If you filed for unemployment before mid-May and had unemployment in 2020, you may be eligible for an additional refund. The IRS will begin processing these refunds in May, and there's nothing more that you need to do to get it, but you do need to send your tax documents in. If you need help, send them to ABDC for free remote tax preparation. For more information, visit their website at www.abdc.org or call them up at 562-0335. Well, since early 2019, gray whales along the West Coast and Alaska have been dying in higher than normal numbers. Investigators are working on determining the reason behind the increased mortality, and they're requesting help from members of the public and marine community. And they'd like you to report whether you see live whales, if they have strange behaviors, and any dead large whales. And to make that report, call 877-925-7773, or you can email kate.savage@noaa.gov. Kodiak Arts Council and the Frame Shop is inviting Kodiak artists to submit new creative work for the 21st Annual Crab Festival Art Show. If you'd like to submit work, go to the kodiakarts.org website, and you'll find the online submission form. But again, Kodiak Arts Council website.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT 2 times a day, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m. and during the midday report at 12:20. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org.